talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. What you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living like you're living,
living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your
dreams.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
y'all. People,
talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
With your life
running like a red disease,
running like a red disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to call our libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a great day. Hope you're going to do all the things you need to do, want to do, should do, better do, must do, can do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, and yes, you know it, you're going to get it done anyway. You have to. It must get done. That's our problem. Many times we put things off. We procrastinate. But ultimately, we have to get it done. This is African Perspectives, and we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program as it is being presented at this time live, then you can go to the archives. Go to timeforanawakening.com. Scroll down on the right side to see the red, black, and green Lion with African Pose. Click on that and you can listen to previous recorded programs that are dated and titled. So, also on Mondays, from all times I'm going to give our Eastern times, from 8 to 6, it's Acres of Diamonds from 8 to 6 Eastern time. Right after Acres of Diamonds from 8 to 9 is Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, this evening from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC. On Fridays, from 8 p.m. until, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, it's Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then on Sundays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it is not me. It is Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, with her program, Revive, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 until, it is Brother Elliot and Brother Richard with Time for an Awakening. You can give those programs a call on our call-in number at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. So if you want to give us your African perspective today, please give us a call. ULU, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, as we like to say, family-centered economics. We have the ULU Cafe. ULU Cafe, this is a cooperative, dear brothers and sisters. That means that we come together, we pulled our resources, and we're doing for ourselves. Imagine all this stuff and all the things that we are fretting about. If we could get into our minds that is the economic way for us to go. It ain't about entrepreneurism. It ain't about none of that sugar, honey, iced tea. It's about African people being who we are, a collective people. Individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I think, therefore I am. Top of the ladder, the golden rule, or no, whoever the gold, they make the rules, or any of those other things about individualism is a European Caucasian desire. But collectivism is an African imperative. It is a must. We must understand that we have always been a collective people. Let's come together. Let's pull our resources and do for ourselves. So, Us Lifting Us is that organization that can do that. Check us out on the web. Us Lifting Us, USLIFTINGUS.com. Us Lifting Us. Also, to Cafe Ulu, CFEULU.com, Cafe Ulu, where we serve coffee. Coffee is our thing. We have coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, and many more places. Also, loose teas. All the things that are sold at Cafe Ulu are produced by us. Are produced by us. Some locally, some not locally. But they're produced by us and for us. So check out Us Lifting Us on Thursdays on Blog Talk at 9 p.m. And check out Cafe Ulu. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, which is an American African business directory. Everything you need from American African owned businesses. We Buy Black, the largest online market for American African businesses. We Buy Black. Check it out. WeBuyBlack.com. WeBuyBlack.com. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, 6984 Main Street, Lithonia. My good brother Ajamu, check him out. He's the owner operator. Phone number 404-519-8107. Because there's a few bookstores here in the Atlanta area, the Shrine of Black Madonna, and of course the Medinetra Bookstore, located in Greenbrier Mall. But this is a cultural center by the Black Dot Bookstore in Lithonia. There is light in the Black Dot, Ashe. Abakasan Sum Sum, which is African Spiritual Warfare, May 12th, from 12:30 to 6:30 in Lithia Springs, Georgia, at Sweetwater State Park, Mount Vernon Road, in Lithia Springs, Georgia, where we raise up the spirit of Dr. John Henry Clark. This year's focus, building Quilombos from war camp to African sovereignty. African World Sovereignty Movement. My good sister and friend will be on, hopefully. So we'll talk about that in a week or so. Sister Marimba Ani, she has led this for 15 years. And I've attended the last few, and it's beautiful. It is beautiful. So we have those things, and I hope that you can check those out. And we're going to talk today. My brother's with me today because today is Wednesday, and today is Wednesday. We have opened up the Black Matrix.
Hey, brother.
How are you? How you doing, brother? Good. Frank Jones is with us on Wednesdays with his commentary and thought-provoking analysis on dealing with the African mind. This past Monday, I want to thank, too, the brothers and sisters from the UK and from Jamaica for last week, Wednesday's conference. Turned out to be a conference, didn't it, on what's happening with the possible deportations in from the UK, sending brothers and sisters back to the Caribbean who were there for decades because they came there during the Second World War to help rebuild and clean up London. I'm going to tell you, my brother, last night I listened to Dr. Rogers' program, Brother Frank.
Yes.
And he talked about Paul Coffey, and he talked about mass incarceration. But he started with talking about Paul Coffey. And Paul Cuffey became a wealthy man. He was independent. He was not in captivity. He was not he wasn't captured, but he was in the midst of all this madness. And of course, his solution was, let's go back home. He had a boat. He was taking people back to Sierra Leone or back to what later be probably in that area in West Africa, and Liberia and so forth. But his whole thing was, let's go back home. Martin R. Delaney, Pan-Africans, let's go back home. There are many of our people who looked at the situation. Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, Bishop Henry McNeil Turner said that God is black. He's got to be black, because if God is a white man, there is no hope. And I love that quote, because it's real. It's real because of God. But you understand, though, in the psychological drama of particularly of Christianity, how has it been imposed upon us, even to this very day? I'm sorry, brothers and sisters. I don't care how many African artifacts you have in your church. If you're Christian, that image is in your mind, because it's supposed to be. I know that there are some of us who do believe in Christian liberation theology. I don't, but there's some of us that do. And the reason why I don't is because of how Christianity was formulated. In fact, Christianity speaks to you individually. Christianity is not a salvation for African people, number one, because it doesn't bring us together. It speaks to you, as some of them say, I'm saved and highly favored. Oh, you're saved. You know, your community is going to hell. Your family is going to hell. Everything around you is going to hell, but you saved and highly favored. It doesn't speak to African liberation. Christianity doesn't, nor Islam. That's why I consistently say, if you have a theology, that's good for you. Don't impose it on anybody else. Quit proselytizing. But if that is you, but when you come to the meeting about us, keep that in your back pocket. Leave it at home. Put it in the closet. Because the bottom line is, we don't catch hell by these Europeans because we're Christian. Because they imposed upon us to make us docile any damn way. Slaves, obey your masters. We don't catch hell because we Muslims. And we understand, too, how we became Muslims. And understand, too, what Islam has done to African people and continue to do to African people. We don't catch hell because we Omega Sci-Fi, AKA or whatever, Urban League, NAACP, none of that. We catch hell because we are African people. And as the piece I played on Monday with Dr. Mike Adams, that we are targeted for extermination. But we don't want to believe that, do we, Brother Frank? We don't want to believe that, do we?
Oh, that's amazing that people don't believe it. I mean, you keep hearing the white elite talk about depopulation. We have to reduce the population size. Who think they're going to go after? They're not going after white people. They're going to reduce it coming after us.
Right. Now, because Brother Frank, when they talk about there's too many people in there. I just saw a piece on Facebook where, I hate England. No offense to Brother Paul and brothers and sisters in the UK who are listening. Understand that, you know. But I hate the British. I hate the damn so-called royals. They ain't no damn royalty.
And you're referring to European, make it clear, you're referring to the European establishment, not the brothers and sisters down there, I understand.
Right. Yeah. You know, I hate it. I hate it with a passion, you know. And you know, there was one piece where it shows the one that's in the line on the throne, if it's daddy croaks. He said, the world is overpopulated, we must decrease population. No, it's not.
Yeah.
See, they were paying Caucasian women in Europe to have children. In fact, this European Jew named Ben Wathenberg wrote a book called The Decline of the West. Not only was he talking about the decline in numbers, but decline in their influence and decline of the imposition of their culture on other people. Because understand something, race is not
There is no such thing as race. There's no such thing as race. Europeans, Caucasians, created this concept of race and began to call themselves white and give a definition of that concept of white as being pure, honest, loving, caring, da-da-da, all this old bull. And then, of course, the opposite of white is black, and it's sullied and demonized and it's ugly and it's, you know, all these other things. That's why I'm saying to us, let's stop this madness. Let's stop this coloration. We are Africans. Let's call us who and what we are. We're Africans. But, of course, that's been muddled because we can't come together, which we must do and should do, better do, and better do it soon, and say, this is who we are. But now you got some of us, Brother Frank, who believe that we're indigenous. No, not the Native Americans, not the ones they call Indians, but us, and that we're not African, and the African enslavement of us didn't happen. This is an insanity that's beyond comprehension.
Yeah, some of these ideologies are created by the white establishment, and the gullible naive us among us grasp onto these ideologies and start spreading them, and they bring division among us. Because remember, the white establishment benefits from us being divided.
Yes.
So these ideologies, the divisive ideology, is promoted by the white, and the black people adopt them and start carrying it. But it's amazing because it's so ignorant, because all DNA analysis confirms our African ancestry.
Yes.
So those people that insisted we're not Africans, they ignore the science. They ignore it. They continue pushing forward that we are not. And there is no proof whatsoever to sustain their belief that we're not African. In fact, they found a frozen girl, hundreds of, I can't remember the year, like 800 years old, as they said she was. And they have her in a museum, and this Native American girl, she looks like Native American. She doesn't look like us. You know? Mm-hmm. Her DNA consists of Native American.
Right.
But the court, the fact that they so insisted that we are the true Native American, and we insult our Native American brothers when we do that. We step on their heritage. We tell them that they're not truly Americans. They're not. We tell them that, and it creates division. So it's really crazy when you look at the whole story. What I do is I kind of just ignore those ignorant ones.
Right.
Speaking truth, being forward, and those who speak truth will come together. Because we can't get everybody. Some people are just idiots, you know?
That's the truth. That's the truth. Yeah. And so, you know, That battle is a real. I mean, any brother Frank, any battle that we have internally is ridiculous to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we challenge each other on the idea of what this program is about, which is independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, we should not be debating and discussing or in a conversation about whether we should be independent or self-determining or liberated or sovereign. That's crazy. Only discussion we should be having is how can we achieve this for our people, for our very salvation, for our very lives, so we can be a people again who will be players in the world instead of the pawns that we have become, that we have been made to be. Let me put it that way, because that's the truth. You see, how can we throw off the all the ignorance and all of the superstition and all this mysticism and BS to come together and say this is the direction that we as African people must go? And there's clearly in my mind, as I mentioned about Paul Coffey, he understood we got to get out of here. This is madness. We have to get out of here. But yet our people still believe that some way, somehow, that we can change the minds of these Caucasians by legislation, by sitting in, by demonstrating, by boycotting, by voting. Our condition in this country will never change.
I mean, we see with the protests. I mean, let's look at the football players, the athletes. When they protest peacefully by taking a knee, what is more peaceful than that? Again, let the David condemn. David put down for peacefully protesting. So in other words, the white establishment tell us they don't want to do shit.
That's right.
They're not real, they're nothing. When they mistreat us, we're supposed to be quiet and take it.
That's right.
You know? I mean, if people don't see the fact, you know, what's actually happening, when you look at the fact that when you have a man protest by taking a knee, that he's being so severely attacked that he ends career, that shows the situation we're in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That definitely shows it.
And see, what frustrates me is our people continue to believe there's somehow there should be a change, and that these contradictions in the society and the double standards in the society, all that should change. No, it's part of what happens. It's supposed to be this way for them to maintain their position of dominance and control. They're not going to change. We must change. We must, as I always say, step outside of the imposed boundaries that these crackers have put us in and look at this for what it is. Release that vice grip on your mind and look at this for what it is. Not that we will hold it up to Caucasians and hopefully they'll have some sympathy and some moral understanding, that they will change their heart and their minds and apologize and maybe even give restitution or maybe even give reparations. Ha! Don't make me laugh. It hasn't happened. It's not happening, and it ain't going to happen. So stop it, y'all. But it persists. It persists because we have bought into this ugly system. We have men and women who believe through the electoral process, through the offices they hold, the positions they have, that and also too they believe that America is unique and America has exceptionalism. America is the exceptional melting pot of the world, an example. Oh, hell no, it ain't. America is just like America is in South Africa, like America is in Europe, like America is in Israel, like America is in Australia. It's crackers, the same damn crackers. I don't know what's wrong with me, Brother Frank, but I have been on this kind of mental binge, I guess. I need to go somewhere and chill out because I had just really been upset, man.
I better just go, boy. Speak, let it out.
You know, I really have.
You know what? Even though perhaps we're not hearing the voices of those who feel as you do as strongly as you would like to, I believe, however, that the voices are there. I believe there has been our collective conscience in this country particularly has been shook. I think it's been shifted since the first election of President Obama. When President Obama became president, black people was elated. There were people on the night after the election who were crying. I saw a black correspondent on Fox crying and shaking. They believed that there was this change that was going to come.
Right.
And
right.
To see this president come.
Right.
Served two terms and did nothing for the black society. And then to be followed up with the most racist president we've reached, openly racist president we've had in years. I believe that has to touch the black psyche.
Yes.
To follow up with a big disappointment of President Obama's election, of his presidency, which he did nothing for black people. We actually lost rights under him. And now to be followed up with this, the racism we're getting from this president, I believe that there is an awakening of many people. There were always people like you and myself who are awake. But given the last 10 years, I'm pretty sure that some of those who were in La La Land are kind of waking up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying that there are not, that still we don't have those who are deeply blind. I have family members who are still deeply blind. But I do believe the degree of what's been happening, there are some of those who are forced to rethink and start to see the reality that we're in. And to see that we can go on, we can have a president for 8 years, an African-American president, and still be treated like crap, still get nowhere. If our conditions didn't improve under a black president, our case will never improve in America. And that's the reality.
I love that, Frank. I love that. And that's something that we must come to grips with and understand. If our situation of 8 years under Barack Obama, now, many of our people looked at it like this, if you can remember. I'm just so happy he's the president. We don't ask for nothing right now. Then let's just let him just get in there. You know, we don't want to make him put pressure on him so he can be alienated. So let him do what he got to do. So if he ain't doing nothing for us, that's okay. Let's let him get through that 4 years. Yeah. And then the next time we elect him again, and believe me, we did. I didn't vote for him the second time. I voted for him the first time. I gave him some money. I voted for him the first time. But because this is what I said prior to the election, and I remember I was still in Milwaukee, of course. I said, if by electing Barack Hussein Obama, that our condition is better, not monumentally, but just incrementally in small ways. There's less of us mass incarcerated. You can see those numbers going down. There's less of us in poverty. There's less of us in problems with our health issues. There's less of, you know what I'm saying? All of these factors in education and so, and all of these things, and all of the social ills that is more profound enough than anybody else, we can see because of him being elected that these things were decreased. And our situation is better. But no, it didn't. And because when he got reelected, he did nothing. In fact, I'm insulted that Donald Trump is going, because I said it on his way out. I said he needs to pardon Jack Johnson. He needs to pardon Marcus Garvey. He needs to pardon. You know, I knew he wasn't going to pardon Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. And I knew he wasn't going to pardon Assata Shakur. I knew that. But at least Jack Johnson and Marcus Garvey, he didn't even do that. And Trump is talking about pardoning Jack Johnson. I was like, damn. You know, it's a shame. We got some other callers. Let's take a call, okay? Let's take a call. 646. Good morning.
What's happening, good brothers?
What's up? What's up there, Jay? How are you today?
I'm good. I see you talking about this filthy stick in your rugal early in the morning, man.
I know.
Hey, listen. The bottom line is, unfortunately, and I'm sorry to say it, most of our people love being under the thumb in the direction of the rugal. It's just that plain and simple. You know, I mean, we have to come to the point to where as certain individuals, we just have to cast aside and forget about their black behind, because they're never gonna come along or join in to a movement of sovereignty because they love the daddy too much. You know what I mean? Between the love of the sky daddy and the Yoruba daddy, you're never gonna win with them. That's just the reality. They can't be saved.
And you know what, Jay? They
can't do it too much, brother.
You know what, Jay? You are so correct. And that's why I could give less than a rat's boop about them. I care about the conscious brothers and sisters. Stop trying to fight. Stop trying to deal with inclusion. Let's try to come together and so we can make, you know, the Exodus didn't happen in the Bible. That's not historical. The Exodus is not the Bible is not historical. Okay, there's just some stories, the moral stories, but it's not historical. The Exodus did not happen, but it must happen. If you understand what I'm saying, the Exodus must happen. And that Exodus is people like ourselves who understand that there is no way in hell that we can continue to be a conscious people with our right minds and in good health under this kind of system. We must come together to create our own. And so it is those brothers and sisters that are going to be part of that Exodus that gets the hell up out of here and other parts of diaspora, because everywhere in the diaspora that we are treated just disrespectfully. We are under the gun. We are under the thumb. We are relegated to the bottom rung. And so now that we understand the global dynamic, because the piece I played on Monday talked about us being exterminated. The Europeans
objective is to exterminate us, to eliminate us off the planet and take Africa and take Africa's resources with us being gone. Let's keep it real.
That's a reality, but see, what people don't realize, and I don't think they understand when they talk about things like politics. Let's look at this and put it in its most broader scope. In all honesty, ask yourself this question. What has drastically changed in your life since Donald Trump's been in office?
Not a damn thing.
And what drastically changed in your life for the 8 years that Puff the Magic Negro was in office?
Not a damn thing.
In all honesty, what really changed? Could you tangibly point out things that changed in your life?
See, for me, though, Jay, I've been a Pan-Africanist, cultural nationalist for over 30-some years, maybe longer, because my mindset has been there. My mindset was that way back in the 60s. I gravitated to Malcolm. I went to a couple of meetings with the Republic of New Africa. So my thinking was that way.
But Oshie, you're not answering the question. I'm trying to get you to answer the question. Separate yourself from your Pan-Africanist. Separate yourself from what you're trying to say. Practically, what has changed?
Nothing.
And look at the people around. There you go.
Nothing. Nothing has changed, Jack.
Nothing has changed other than the narrative and the continuous control of white supremacy over our lives. But we still get up every day and do the same thing. You understand? We still get up and go to work. We still get up and try and educate our children. We still get up and do all of the things necessary to live until the Creator decides to take our lives. But in the process, we never ever try to separate ourselves from the brutality to which the Yoruba places on us as a collective. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We're always looking to be a part of the system and to get the daddy to stop beating us. Now, he's not beating us physically like he used to, but he's beating us psychologically in all other sorts of ways. And that's where we are not developing and growing, is putting forward a system, number one, to separate ourselves psychologically from the Yoruba, and then placing ourselves in a position to move homeward bound and to move forward as a people. Because in all actuality, nothing really changes.
No.
You understand what I'm saying? We don't see the systematic oppression and brutality that the Yoruba place on us mentally, because we're caught up into more of the physical than the mental. But if you look at the system of white supremacy and all of the things that the Yoruba is doing, he's constantly putting pressure on you and putting you in a position as you move forward, things become harder and harder and harder. But we don't understand that.
Right.
That's why when you talk about Barack Puff the Magic Negro never did nothing for us, you're so correct. But most Negroes wouldn't see it that way, because they don't understand that he continued a system of oppression against African people psychologically.
But see, Jay, what it is, and Brother Frank, please jump in, because what it is that, you know, we believe just because of his presence that somehow things were going to change. We didn't understand.
And that's psychological.
Right, because we didn't understand that he was there, and any president of the United States of America, be it a male or female, be it African, European, Latino, Asian, whatever the hell you talk about, is there to do the bidding for those who are in control. Exactly. Yeah. They're there to maintain and sustain that privilege that that Caucasians created. Go ahead, Frank.
He signed he swore an oath to defend, you know, the objective of the U.S. government, the national interest. And embedded within that national interest is the ideology of white supremacy. Even though they may not say it, but embedded in there, the national interest of white society. For example, going into Africa, exploiting Africa, protecting Africa's natural resources, that's all a part of America maintaining American dominance, national interest. So as the president, he carries out those goals. He carries out those agendas. So yes, he is a slave to white supremacy, and that's what it is. His skin color doesn't matter. His name doesn't matter. Once he's in that position, he holds he's the quarterback on that same team, and his job is to take care of the team. And that's what it is.
I mean, just look at what that no good Puff the Magic Negro did in the last week. He didn't have the decency, nor all his damn wife had the decency to give condolences to our African queen,
Winnie Mandela. Winnie. That's right.
But then he could go and sit at the service of that no good, sticky, filthy, drunk Baba Bush. Now, here he is, a white man who knew her well, said that she was nothing more than a nasty, filthy, stinking drunk.
Yes.
But you go sit there with the rest of the enemies of the planet, you and your wife, and the sick Negro applauds it. See?
Bumper's also a racist also. Remember during the Hurricane Katrina?
Yes.
When the blacks were complaining about the appalling conditions inside the arena, she said, well, what are they complaining about? This is the ghetto in the hood anyway. This is an upgrade for them.
Okay.
So I'm paraphrasing her, but that's what she said. You're like, wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now think about this. The Chevy is a mate of the filthy, stinking, no good devil witch. What did she do the night before she went to go see this god daddy, if he let her ass in? You know, she had a drink of bourbon. Now, wouldn't that be something that a filthy, no good, stinking drunk would do? You're about to go see the daddy, and you're going to have you your last glass of bourbon. So that was more important to you than anything else in the world, to taste that last sip of the sauce.
You know, you
with a no good, filthy, stinking white woman like the majority of them are. But listen, now the bottom line is, what are we going to do to really, honestly, and truthfully rid ourselves of this no good, filthy, stinking white man? Well, because, you know, I'm hearing the rumblings now, and everybody's talking about registering your Negroes to vote, and this and that. I want one of you brothers to tell me, what has the vote ever did for African people?
Well, we all know the vote is an illusion, but the vote is an illusion not only on the minds of African people, but on the white nationalists as well, because we know the ruling elite control the process through electoral colleges. And the illusion of people going in line and voting, it just creates the illusion of a democracy. It makes the people feel that they're part of the process, and it keeps the masses from revolting. But it's merely an illusion. And therefore, inherently, the voting process causes nothing for black people.
Is there a community of African people here in this country that have a semblance of control over their community, and they did it by voting? You let me know that community. Give me information. My point exactly.
Ain't none.
There ain't none. Because just as Brother Frank said, this is an illusion. Voting is a sham. In fact, I remember back when Barack first ran, I think it was Puff Daddy and a few others had that T-shirt, Vote or Die, if you remember that. Now, I said he should have a T-shirt, Unite, or unify. Unify or die. In fact, I think that we should make that T-shirt and put that T-shirt out every damn where with the red, black, and green, because that should be in the mindset of African people. Either we unify or we're going to die. Point blank. You know, but because they believe, we wanted to believe. We wanted to believe. And I said on that radio program, I'll never forget, I said, if Barack Obama, just in a small measure by his presidency, our condition is better, than yes, he was the right choice for us. But if our condition isn't, then we could have elected Mickey Mouse or Hillary Clinton. And our condition worsened. More of us were in prison. More of us were killed by the police. And then and then when he comes to American African audience, he comes as a chastiser. He comes who's criticizing. Go ahead, Brother Frank. You know,
yeah, definitely know that. You know, he comes chastising us. You know, when we protest Chile and whatever else, he said, you know, if you people stop doing this, if you need to stop doing that, that's how you speak to us.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's all they're playing, because you got to understand who's in control, and the European Jews, because of their dominance and influence, particularly in areas of finance and media and so forth, are in control of the situation. Now, of course, when you say that, openly say that, like Spike Lee did, like Marlon Brando did, like Michael Jackson did, I'm quite sure there are a few others that did, and of course they were made to publicly apologize.
Yes.
Because they were called anti-Semitic. They ain't no damn Semitic people. How can they be anti-Semitic?
Yeah, but they have Semitic people because they control the narrative.
That's
to
right.
Tell the world that they are Semitic people.
That's right.
The difference. When you can control the narrative, then you can be whatever the hell you wish to be. But listen, let me say this before I go. One of the greatest tragedies in this country is about to happen within the next couple of days. And we got to really watch this and think about this. Because the individual that's going to suffer this tragedy has done more for America and the Negro than anybody has in the last 50 years. Bill Cosby is about to be convicted. Now, you think about this, and I want you to really, really think about this. Bill Cosby, with his show, The Cosby Show, created more Negro peas in America than anybody else ever has. Because our people looked at that show and strived for excellency. They went to college. They incorporated themselves into this Yoruba society like no one else. Martin Luther King couldn't have done a better job. And now here it is, this man who is 80 years old, basically blind, is going to be rewarded by America for all that he's done for them by spending the rest of his life in a 9-by-5. All because of the accusations of the Rugal woman who he paid millions of dollars to. That is nothing more than a filthy, bisexual, degenerate-looking sick freak who, if, you know, regardless of whatever happened, he had to be going blind, because when you look better, it's no way you could give it up. But the bottom line is this. He's going to spend the rest of his life in jail. Think about that. They're going to spend close to $100,000 a year to reward this man for all that he's done under the auspices and the allegations that he harmed some white women. Hey, listen, I don't care whatever we say. It shows for allowing this to happen. The punks that we are as a people. Because them Negro peons who he has helped place in the position that he's in, regardless of whatever it is, should be at his defense, demanding that that man does not spend the rest of his life in a cage at 80-some years old in regards to things that supposedly happened 20, 30 years ago.
What happened to statute of limitation? That's kind of throwing me off. Isn't there a statute of limitation?
No, there's no statute of limitation, they say, in regards to rape or something. Or I think what that happened was prosecutor...
No, it is. There is a...
...to make a name for himself,
no,
and caught it within time.
No, this one...
To be able to prosecute him.
No, this case, this specific one... The statute of limitations did not run out. The other ones they did, because they're talking about something that happened 20, 30 years ago. But this particular one was the one of the more recent ones, I think like 10 years or something to that effect. I'm sure.
And
they
ran out. But the prosecutor wanted to make a name for himself. So this is what he ran on. He got into office and then he did whatever he did. Because the first prosecutor didn't bring up charges, but he left it open-ended like this so this could happen. And here it is, Bill Cosby, think about it, is going to spend the rest of his life in jail over an allegation where there's no proof or no nothing. It's her word against his word and things that he may have said in the past. And that's a tragedy. Because that man's done more, he's done more for black people in this country than anybody.
I have a question for you. I haven't been following the case as lately. Been really busy. You feel that? So what? It's over for him?
Yeah, I think they're gonna get him. I'm hoping that they don't get him. But I think that they're gonna get him because of this whole Me Too movement and, you know, the desire to protect the white woman, to make her seem as though she's of some value and virtue, based on what they did to Hillary Clinton and all of the other things. But yeah, they're gonna get them. I hope they don't get them. But you know, regardless if they don't get them, they're gonna try and take away just about everything that he has. But the good thing is, his money is so long that he may not be able to do it, but it's just a whole scam of, you know, just going after the man.
What's interesting is that, you know, all of this time, all of these years, nothing has been brought forth. Many of the women said, well, he's famous and so forth. But when he tried to buy NBC and put together a financial team where he could have done it if it would have been approved, but they said, oh, hell no.
But that's a myth, man. Don't believe that. That right there is mythology, man.
What's mythology? That he was going to try to buy NBC?
I watched that whole thing, and I've read a lot on that. That wasn't going to go down the way it was. And if it did go down, he wasn't going to have the type of power that people are trying to make it seem. That's that Illuminati and all that other nonsense.
No. Well, Jay. Was he not going to try to buy NBC?
Yeah, but it wasn't on the level to where people trying to make it seem. He was not the head person trying to buy it. He was part of the group of individuals that were trying to buy it.
That's what I'm saying. He put a team. There was a team together. And I'm quite sure there was some Caucasians in that mix and some others. I understand that. But because of his name, he was out front. And because of what he has done, and particularly what he did for NBC, because his program, The Cosby Show, ran on NBC and was one of the top programs, you know, for many years. You see,
it saved NBC.
Yes, you know, we got another call. Let me.
The thing was, and this is where I have issue with. Don't say that they attacked him because he wanted to buy NBC. Because honestly, the people, see, this is what people don't understand, is Cosby made a lot of money with, you know, the Cosby Show, but Chase and Warner, I think it is, made more money than him. Even though they were both, all three executive producers on the show, the split wasn't the same. There was a bigger split than the others was getting. See, there's a lot more to the reality than a lot of people understand, because a lot of people really don't understand the dynamics of the entertainment business and how it works.
Okay.
But the point of the matter is, yes, he was part of the group and all of that, but he wasn't the key figure. He was like what they do with most Negroes. They put them out front, but in the background, it's others who control and who finance and do all of the necessary things. It's just like a black person, you know, buying a baseball team. Perfect example, Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter went out there and bought the Miami Marlins or whatever, but he only owned a small percent of it. It's
yeah, but see, right, because, but see, Jay, what you understand,
but
right,
the face person.
Right, because that's the noted face. Who is the most noted? Who has the most publicity? Who has the most notoriety? That is the person that's going to be out front. We have another call. Let's take this call because we're going to take a break in a minute. Let's take this call before the break. 267, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
All right, how you doing this afternoon or this morning? Or afternoon,
good,
that's what
sir.
It is. Good.
Good. I'm just going to say I'm enjoying the show. And the subject is so interesting. I'm in Philadelphia, and the trial is in Norristown, and I've been observing what's going on with Mr. Cosby. And looking at what Jay's saying, who I'm familiar with, coming on Elliot's show, and I guess I'm in a situation now where I could just listen. I can't talk much, but you know, I'll be listening more, and I'll be calling in at times when I can't talk more.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for that. Thank you.
Exactly. So, listen, I like the dialogue, so just keep it going, because I'm going to call in one day when I can really talk, okay?
I appreciate that, brother. Peace to you. All right. Peace to you. Well, listen, Jay, we're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, you got to run.
Listen, let me just leave you with this.
Sure.
Let us hope that as you continue your dialogue, that we come up with a solution to try and rid ourselves of this Shurugal, man. Because honestly, man, you know, I want to figure out a way how we can rid ourselves from him, how we can get away from this bastard. You know, instead of talking about it, what could we collectively in small groups practically come together and rid ourselves and get away from this filthy, no good, stinking bastard? Have a good day.
All right, Jay. You too, dear brother. We're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, there'll be more discussion with my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, the Black People Matrix.com. Check him out, the Black People Matrix.com. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on TimeForAnAwakening.com, and BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com. This is The Power of Imani, The Power of Imani, by Shavinduka.
Every day, from the moment I wake, there are thoughts that stay on my mind. Is there really a way to keep faith? Follow me when I rise, and my fears.
That's Chavin Duke and Steve, Kwame Cobb and Chavin Duke out of Chicago from their Panza CD, The Seven Principles, and that is Faith, Imani. Beautiful song. Play them from time to time. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Once again, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then, of course, the other lineup we have here is on Mondays. Oh, Brother Marcus, you want to say something? 602.
Yes.
Go ahead,
yes,
Brother Marcus.
Brother,
go ahead.
Brother Frank. You know, in the early 1990s, I was a part of a Back to Africa organization. It was called African Nationalist the African Nationalist Pioneer Movement. And the organization is the way we're going to get out of the situation that
yes.
we are in. But we have to study the mechanics of organization because, you know, everybody's saying, you know, we should get together, we should, you know, unite and everything, which is correct, you know, but we have to study the mechanics of organization. How do we organize? And the way the organization was structured, it had 26 department funds and agencies that affected all aspects of Black life. And then it had 74 members. So the 74 members would manage the 26 different departments, and each department or each entity, it made up 100. It was 100 entities, and each entity had $1,000 stock in share. Everybody had the same vote. It was, you know, balances. No one person could dominate, you know, had more shares and everybody was on an equal playing field. It's a good organizational structure. The problem we had was the people, some of the people in the organization, they didn't know what they were in. They didn't know, you know, we didn't have a common cause psychosis then. You know, everybody wasn't on the same page. you know. So it created problems in the organization. So we have to go back to, you know, you know, that drawing board and see how to organize. Because, as I said, what we were doing is we would organize here and then dispatch somebody to Africa to set up a base in Africa. See? So you get a house in Africa, set up a base in Africa, start developing trade with Africa, so we'll have the monies to make everything, you know, liquid, mm-hmm. and then we'll start moving back and forth. Well, unfortunately, what happened, the administrator, he mysteriously died after going to Namibia a couple of times. The last time he went to Namibia, he stayed in a hotel, and we think that he got poisoned because, you know, he was going eating food from them people, you know, they're twice, right. You know.
Don't so put anything past them. That's for sure. Don't put anything past them.
Exactly. And everything fragmented, you know, and everybody dispersed. But if we are going to survive this dilemma that we're in, we are going to have to study the mechanics of organization, how to organize organizational structure, bylaws, paying dues, because that is the only way we're going to sustain, you know, organizations.
Right. So, well, you know, thank you, Brother Marcus.
If we can get to that level, then we can begin to see some progress, you know. But, you know, short of that, you know, I mean, coming together, you know, we are together in the church, you know, Saturday and Sunday every day, every Sunday, you know. So we have to study the mechanics of
organization. Well, you know what made ancient Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt, great and sustaining itself over the thousands of years. The young people that I work with, I always told them that ancient Kemet became great because of four things: study, mm-hmm. communications, cooperation, and organization. Study. They studied everything. They studied the stars. They studied land. They studied the animals. They studied everything. And number one, Kemet is on the Nile River. They had to study when the river was going to inundate, flood,
exactly.
and when it was going to recede, because outside of that river and the narrow strips along the banks, it was desert. It was desert. So they had to know when that river receded, that's when they did the agricultural piece. When the river inundated, that's when they cut stone and sailed them down river or up from south to north, to build pyramids, temples, and tombs. Study. Study generated science. Study generated religion. Everything was born out of study. And once they understood that, communicate. They communicated.
Exactly.
They were clear in their communications. And because of that clear communications, they cooperated with one another. Study, communications, mm-hmm. cooperation. They didn't diss one another. They weren't fragmented.
Exactly.
They cooperated. And that led to the last. Organization. Yep. In order for them to do what they did to last forever, they were organized. It is clear that the ancient Kemetic society, all the temples and tombs, all the things that were built, were not built because they put somebody in bondage to build them.
Exactly.
That they were putting under the sting of the lash for them to build them. Study.
Yes.
Communication.
Yes, Dr. Ben, I saw Dr. Ben in Egypt, and he was showing you the Nile meter, you know, our people use that, so they could know when, how high that we were going to be from that Nile meter. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know the technology those people had, you know, because it was, you know, Egypt was closed for 5,000 years.
Yeah.
You know? For 5,000 years, we kept the Greeks out. It's only when we opened it up, that's when our society began to decline. Anytime
right.
we let. And even in those days, our people said, these people are a bad omen. You know, when they said that in those ancient times. So look,
right.
when you let these people in, we're going to have problems. And we see what's happening today. So, you know, we have to get back, as I said, study, you know, organize, and to get that common cause psychosis, because that was a problem we had, Brother Oshi. You know, it was so much confusion, and then the organization grew so fast because you know, we were going to Namibia, and once we mentioned diamonds and gold, oh man, everybody started coming. Boo, 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 boo. Mm-hmm. And he had problems because people started just coming for that, you know.
Because they had that European mind. They had that European mind. What is in it for me? That's the problem.
When you mention diamonds, people, what diamonds? You know, everybody started coming. And all kind of misfits and degenerates came in, and it just went downhill. So, you know, we have to, you know. But anyway, I'll continue listening.
All right.
Another problem we see is, if you notice where we speak, the frustration that we express and how real we speak, you know, sadly, the way the system is set up, the way we speak, our dialogue, our rhetoric, it's more common among the grassroots level, the working class black people.
Right.
The system
is
set up where those blacks become, when they become more affluent and more successful, they start to merge more with white society. And their mental state change where they're just looking for a more secure footing in white society. So therefore, when we try to organize many of those blacks who are affluent, who has the financial resources, the wealth, they're not helping us. Because they're partners, they're now in partnership with whites, and they don't want to rock the boat with whites. So it appears, we often have a situation where those who are seeking black liberation are more often those who are the working class, those at grassroots level, those who are among the poor. You know, the system is set up where the more education the white man gives you, the more he indoctrinates your mind.
Exactly.
The more wealth you make, the more your mindset changes. So the situation we have is we have the awakened ones who don't have power, and those of us who then gain power and affluence don't want to rock the boat with the white man.
Try to get away from our people.
Yeah, so that creates the system that we look at. We say, just we don't have unity, but it's all by design of how the system is created. You know,
exactly.
It's all by design.
It's all by design.
Yes.
Well, all right, I'll continue listening. Good brother.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you, brother Marcus. Mm-hmm. We're not going to really shift gears here, but an article came to my attention, and you know, and as someone who understands the importance of telling our story and our history, and I understand that Caucasians and Brother Frank has helped us out with this consistently, controlling and creating a narrative that favors them. Winston Churchill, who I can't stand, Winston Churchill said that history is going to be kind to England. Why? Because I'm going to write it. You know, in fact, the other day, I do water aerobics, and the sisters, and I'm on one of the only, there's another brother in there with me, but the sister was saying about the queen, because one of the sisters is African, and she's gone to England and so forth, and of course, the baby just got born, and all this old madness, and I just said to the sisters, I hate the British. I can't stand the British for what they have done to our people and to the world.
Yes.
You know, when you see the so-called queen sitting down in the midst of all that gold bullion, all that gold, where did it get it from? When you consider their museums and all the stuff with all our artifacts that they have stolen, when you can see the death and destruction they have, coming to find out, they still have about 50 entities under their control, 50 countries that are still influenced as a commonwealth or some kind of entity under their control today. And so when her birthday happened last week, there was this big concert and so forth and a few people performing. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I know the wedding's coming up, and the wedding is going to be on May 19th. I'd be like, damn, that's a special day for me, because that's El Hajj Malik El Shabazz's birthday, May 19th, you know?
Yeah.
And yet that wedding, you know, and I just can't stand them, because once again, they want to control the narrative. So here's a piece that I got from The Root. The Root's not one of my favorite sources, but they come up with stuff every now and then. And the author is Michael Herrett, which is not one of my favorite columns either, because he tries to be cute and funny at times when he shouldn't be. But this is a good article, and it's well-written, so I'm going to give this to you. Millions of students are quietly being taught the Koch brothers' whitewashed version of American African history. Cash-strapped social study teachers across America have discovered an exciting new resource that provides lesson plans, study materials, even seminars geared towards elementary, middle, and high school students. The lessons are extremely detailed and come with suggestions for activities, multimedia, and additional reading. More importantly, unlike many educational tools, most of these materials are provided free of cost. There's only one catch. It is a right-wing brainwashing. These free resources are part of an effort by Innocuous named Bill of Rights Institute. Innocuous named Bill of Rights Institute, the BRI, the Bill of Rights Institute, to brainwash students into buying the far-right narrative on history, politics, and economics. The charitable organization describes itself as a 501c3 nonprofit educational organization that works to engage, educate, and empower individuals with a passion for the freedom and opportunity that this great society provides. What it really is an education arm of a network of right-wing charities funded by the ultra-conservative Koch brothers in conjunction with a number of other conservative philanthropic individuals and organizations. It takes billions of dollars in donations and claims to have taught the Bill of Rights to more than 5 million students and 50,000 teachers, including directly training 22,000 educators through its constitutional seminars. The lessons stressed limited government, religious freedom, free market economies, worst of all, a revisionist version of the history of captivity that paints it as a necessary evil to further freedom and democracy. So it's a revisionist version of our history and our suffering, and says it was a necessary evil to create the freedom and democracy that we have. Unless you've been hiding under a rock, which if you have, I don't blame you, because it might offer some protection against the up-and-coming nuclear holocaust with North Korea, and you know the Koch brothers. Charles and David Koch are billionaire owners of the Koch industry, the second largest privately held company in the country. Tied at number 8th on the Forbes list of richest people in the world, the brothers have a net worth as an estimated $60 billion apiece. $60 billion apiece, and use their funds to further their Caucasian agenda. According to the New York Times, the Koch brothers plan to spend close No, according to New York Times, the Koch brothers did spend close to $1 billion on the 2016 election cycle, more than the entire Republican committee did. Their investment led to Republican majorities in the House and the Senate, their hand-picked Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who is now out, and, of course, the election of Donald J. Trump. But it is the Koch brothers' quiet philanthropic efforts that garner them the most bang for their buck. They use foundations and corporations to funnel their money to organizations under the cover of anonymity. Take, for instance, the Donors Trust Foundation and Donors Capital Fund. Conservative Transparency reports the Koch brothers network has provided Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund with most of its backbone. It is widely noted that Donors Trust and Donors Capital Fund are part of the Koch brothers network. And in 2014, the last year available, but not one of the contributions to the Bill of Rights Institute, the BRI, came from either the Koch brothers Charitable Foundation, the Donors Trust Fund, or the Donors Capital Fund. The Bill of Rights Institute is funded by the Koch brothers tax-free. So what does the Bill of Rights Institute teach? Almost every lesson plan stresses the conservative idea of limited government, best explained by this quote from the lesson on the limited role of government. Perhaps the most definitive limitations on government are found in the Bill of Rights. A firewall protects a computer from outside attempts to harm it. So too does the Bill of Rights guard fundamental rights, natural and civil. In fact, far from most Americans' popular understanding, the Bill of Rights has a giver of rights. Most Ask most Americans, where did they get their right to free speech from? And the answer will always be, they cite the First Amendment. And in actuality, is the limiter, the government authority. They got it from the Bill of Rights, right? According to the lesson plan titled Healthcare and the Bill of Rights, it focuses on the healthcare law from multiple constitutional perspectives. Here are some of the perspectives on religion. This is dealing with the Affordable Health Care Act, formerly known as, which I never said because I didn't even like the way it sounded, Obamacare. But this was the Affordable Health Care Act. Religion. The lessons include two articles. This is in their curriculum. The lessons include two articles examining where the Affordable Health Care Act is said to violate religious freedom. Expression. Ask if it violated of the First Amendment to require restaurants to include calorie counts. Personal liberty. Students get to read about the Affordable Health Care Act's abortion coverage. Criminal procedure. How you might be criminalized if you don't purchase health care. Federalism. How Obamacare is indicative of big government. In the lesson on Roe versus Wade, of course, you know that Roe versus Wade was the Supreme Court decision that made abortions legal. The only quote from the Supreme Court decision included in the materials from the dissenting opinion about the value of life. The BRI has videos instructing teachers how to teach the Second Amendment. It selectively plucks excerpts from the Constitution to teach lessons on the Defense of Marriage Act and affirmative action, not to mention the very special lesson on the late, great Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. But in the BRI's view of captivity, which they say slavery, and discrimination, that is most troubling. A homework help video titled Slavery and the Road to the Civil War was so inaccurate, it was removed from the organization's website. To be fair, not all of the lessons are as blatant as the ones that describe the raid, as blatant as the one that describes the raid on Harper's Ferry this way. John Brown deceived himself through self-righteousness, thinking he could end slavery in the United States by freeing and arming captives to launch a racial war in the South. An extended tutorial on slavery and the Constitution spends a lot of time explaining why the founding fathers shouldn't be considered racist. An extended tutorial on slavery and the Constitution spends a lot of time explaining why the founding fathers shouldn't be considered racist, arguing that the founding fathers knew slavery was wrong, but they just weren't active enough to end it. Yeah. The document even contends that Jefferson included Africans in the Constitution and cherry picks part of the historical documents to prove that the founders consistently worked to build constitutional republic of liberty that equally protected the rights of all Americans. Man, this is ridiculous. When students are finished with the lesson, they will have learned absolutely nothing about the inhumane torture of enslavement. The chapter neglects to offer any details about the Atlantic trade, the abolitionist movement, or the plantation system, the economic impact of captivity and how it made the U.S. an economic superpower is completely ignored by BRI's instructions. You might think I'm joking here, but in the 3,000 plus words on the civil rights movement, there are only 4 American African people mentioned in the chapter. Dr. King, Rosa Parks, William Edward Burkhardt Du Bois, and Thurgood Marshall. BRI mostly explains how freedom-loving Caucasians fought for equality for all by putting their lives on the line. As in every damn movie that we see, you always have some benevolent Caucasian. It was that way in the Black Panther movie. Not only that Caucasian, was even worse. He was with the CIA. Man. As a result of Brown decision, the Brown versus Board of Education, many Caucasian politicians and ordinary citizens engaged what they called massive resistance to oppose desegregation. In 1957, Arkansas's Governor Orville Fabisch refused to use the National Guard to protect American African children at Little Rock High School. President Dwight David Eisenhower, who was a Republican, sent in troops from the 101 Airborne Division to compel local desegregation and protect the nine American African students while federalizing the Arkansas National Guard to block Forbush. The Little Rock Nine attended school under the watchful eye of federal troops. The principles of equality and constitutional federalism came into conflict during this incident because the national government used its military to impose integration at a local level. We should have the right to do whatever the hell we want to do at the state level. States' rights. Nothing about fire hoses, nothing about freedom rides, nothing about lynching, nothing about bombing, nothing about beating, nothing about church burning, nothing. But notice the shout out to small government principles clashing with freedom for African people. Again, these lessons are reaching millions of children across America. Most teachers and schools are willing to take any free educational resources that allows them to stretch their meager budgets. Furthermore, most school districts don't have the time or the manpower to closely examine every single lesson plan. BRI also hosts educational seminars for teachers all over the country, instructing how to teach history and civics. The instructional seminars can even go forward toward continuing education credits required in some states. Even the online lesson plans are tailored to the education standards for each state. Combine these facts with two billionaire brothers and unlimited resources, and you get a secret brainwashing program permeating the educational system. Bill of Rights Institute funding is steadily growing. Its reach is widening, and American schools are increasingly underfunded. Dangerous mix that ends up in the Koch brothers' favor. And here's the worst part. Even if parents examine in school their children's lessons, they may not know the source of the information because the institute is geared towards teachers, not students. Even teachers whose lessons are compiled by conservative principals or a right-wing leaning department head might not be aware of the content or from where the lessons originated. To be fair, it is important for students to learn about free market. How else would they discover that money actually can buy everything, including history? Man, I tell you, Brother Frank, this stuff it's not going to stop. It is not going to stop. And that's our problem because we think that it's going to stop. We think that somehow, some magic way that the Caucasian is going to have an epiphany and then bing, he's going to wake up and say, gosh, you know, this whole madness is wrong. Let us, you know, apologize. No. And no, it's not. It's going to continue.
I like to say, you know, at first, I read it. I listened to you. I like to say before I give a comment on it. I was a bit distracted by the fact that it was written from a liberal stance against the Republican. And not that I'm a Republican. I'm not. My point is, we both know in reality that the Republicans and the Democrats are merely wings of the same bird. Okay? So the illusion that this is just something that only Republicans do, the Democrats do it also. I mean, that the entire white agenda socialized our society, controls our educational system. And the ideology towards making whites appear more humane throughout history than they actually were, that is a white agenda, not necessarily Republican or Democrat. It's a white agenda. They both do it. Those people sitting on the panel, putting together our curriculum, are both parties. So I wanted to just say that before I comment. You know, they're all doing it. It isn't just one group. They're all doing it. But, you know, it's the thing with the situation is this, and our people, you know, the hardworking people, we have jobs to go to, we're taking care of our kids, we're paying our bills, and many of us don't understand socialization. We don't understand social engineering.
We don't understand psychological warfare. We don't understand indoctrination. We don't truly understand colonization. We use the word over and over, mental slavery, but we don't truly understand the impact of what's being done to us, you know? So that's why I would say the average African parent, when we start children to school, and when they come home and we see A's on the report card, we reward them. We're pleased. Many of us do not look at how our children are being socialized. A society is a people are inspired and are functioned based upon the stories they believe about themselves. And the stories in white society are designed to exemplify and bolster the self-esteem of white and marginalize and denigrate the self-esteem of black people. So all the information we receive from white sources are biased and distorted to exemplify white people. So we exist within a false reality. The ability to manipulate reality is easy. All you have to do is control all the narratives. When you control all the narratives, you can distort the perception of the people who believe the narrative. So we don't realize because we're sitting in the system, we're in a system, and if it doesn't stop, this system is in place to do the same thing to our children and our children's children. So if this continues, our grandchildren would hate themselves. Mm-hmm. Our great-grandchildren would bleach their skin.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we don't understand that there is a real war against our minds.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand the concept that information is a weapon. We don't understand it. So we send our children to the school of Rome, and we wonder why they come home loving Caesar and hating being an African. You know, and we don't understand how this system is being used to maintain white dominance. Because when the suppressed group is made to feel less of themselves, this makes them adhere to the dominance of white society. This programming is why sometimes when a black person walks into a white person, they feel inferior. This programming is why some people sit up straighter when they're talking to a white person. This program is why some people believe whites are inherently superior. This program is why some whites feel have a false sense of superiority. And it's all a part of societal programming. And our problem is we don't address it. We don't understand it. I mean, when a cop shoots a black man, we understand that and we get upset. But when millions of us are being programmed to hate ourselves and love whites, we sit quietly. We don't understand it.
Right.
And that's the problem.
That is a problem.
We have to simplify this, what's being done to us. And we have to find a way of marketing the simplification of it so more of our people understand it. And then we have to indoctrinate this the simplified version of what's being done to us into our communities. So then our people will be awakened. We have to simplify it, explain it.
You know,
and we have to spread it.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be as clear and concise with helping us to understand this as I can be. I'm not trying to use any, you know, verbiage that is not clear to anybody's ear. Anybody's ear, not just our people, which is my direct message, but anybody outside of us who hears it. You know, I want to be as clear as I can be on the problem and the solution. Now, obviously, the solution is something that we are afraid of and we don't want to deal with because we still believe in somehow that divine intervention may take form, you know.
Yes, and our people, we tend to, we've been programmed to look away from the white establishment in terms of when we see systems among us. I think the most infuriating statements that I hear from my people, when they say blood shall pay this cost by Willie Lynch. That's the dumbest, stupidest, ignorant, most feeble-minded, stupidest statement I could ever hear from a black man. And it infuriates me, but you understand the mind state that we believe that that's how that's going on when the programming is being done to us every day. The program is in our education system. It's in our movies, our TV shows. It's in the narrative that's proposed upon us. Black self-hate is created by the white establishment. It's how they maintain their dominance. because keeping black people self-loathing and divided, protected from black retribution, because it turns our collective aggression away from them and towards ourselves. You know, so we cling to these feeble-minded fairy tales that doesn't liberate our minds, but further enslaves us. But black self-hate is an indoctrination process. It's how white society protects themselves from black retribution. So yes, everyone listening who says William Lynch, it's an ignorant, stupid, frivolous premise. That's not how you control the people. That's not how you program a people. Programming people's mind requires constant reapplication. If not, it weakens for every generation. That's why William Lynch is a feeble-minded, silly, ignorant fairy tale.
And see,
and social engineering signs are laughing at us.
Right.
That's why a black person says William Lynch, we're being laughed at. We're being mocked by the establishment.
Did you ever see the brother that created Willie Lynch?
Yes, I have. Dr. Satya of North Carolina?
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He said he wrote it in 1979, and he wrote it observing what he saw.
Right.
So when people say the symptoms look so real, it's because he observed it. But the symptoms that we're seeing is a result of social engineering.
Right.
Societal social engineering. We're being programmed to feel this way. We're being programmed to feel whites are better.
Right. And so in his effort to say this, you know, because maybe for some of us that was a help. But for most of us, it was a hindrance, because what he was trying to say is that this cracker said, this is what I can do to you. I'm going to do this to you and your people, and you're going to be in a mental enslavement for hundreds of years.
I love the brother, and I know what he was trying to do.
Yep.
I understand what he was saying. But what happened was the white establishment took his ideology, and they used it to serve their interests. They promoted it. They pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
They gave it more exposure,
right?
Because they used it. And I'm telling you how they used it. In the CIA, the FBI, and the Military War College, there's a tactic that they teach. And here's how it goes. It says you want to suppress a group. You must convince them that their core problem is an internalized one. This turns their collective aggression away from their enemies and turns inward against themselves. So by making black people believe that there's something inherently wrong with themselves, that we are our own worst enemy, it turns against ourselves.
So learning that
the Willie Lynch does not liberate us, it enslaves us. Now, the brother who wrote it, that was not his intention, but it was taken and it was amplified and it was used to make black people believe that there was something inherently wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we must never function based upon the spirit that we believe something's wrong with us. And then here it is. It holds our mental state. It holds those responsible for our mental state, our self-hate, as a fictional person in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So if you notice that the ideology never points you at the white establishment.
Right.
The prevailing ideologies always turn you away from the white establishment. That's by design. That's by design.
And see, that's why I love that. I love that great visionary, Stevie Wonder, when he said, when you believe in things you don't understand, you suffer. And we are suffering people. Because number one, we don't listen to those because we've been trained not to. See, another thing, though, Brother Frank, I don't blame us. I don't blame us. And it's truly one thing that I will never say, and I hate, and I don't care who it is. I'll correct him. No, we are not our own worst enemy. Number one,
that's a false, but the white man's our worst enemy.
Exactly.
Anyone who says we are our worst enemy are asleep. They are programmed sleepers.
Yep. You know, but if you believe that, then obviously there's nothing that black or African people can say to you, because you look at them as the worst enemy. And then, of course, who do you turn to? Exactly. You turn to the Caucasian. You turn to, as Brother Jay said, the daddy. And of course, you're guided by the sky daddy. You know?
Yep. And most people just don't understand. We outnumber them in numbers.
Yes.
So they're using psychological warfare on us. They want to use divide and conquer against us. So, yes, it's by design that we believe that we are our own worst enemy. I mean, they have programs. There are programs that they send, that they show Africans, images of African-Americans as thuggery and violent criminals,
sure,
and create fear and division. they create, show up images of Africans that are the worst and poor and as warlords to create a fear. So we're being divided because the images we see of each other are controlled by the white man.
Right.
And the white man benefits. It's, I mean, there's even a reason why they never show the beautiful parts of Africa. Because by showing us the worst parts of Africa, it makes us more compliant with white dominance because it makes us feel, we feel that white people are a favor when they enslave our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
We have to understand that there's an elaborate perception management system. These self-conceptual views that black people have, these are by design.
Right, right.
And these pieces that you just read about what they're doing to the school systems and so on, this is how they've been controlling us for a long time now.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, and if you realize, if you look at the 1960s, and this program you will see is recent also. If you look at the 1960s, right, and it's also why we know about Willie Lynch. Watch this. We went from saying, what's up, my brother, to saying, what's up, my nigger. We
right.
went from saying, hello, my sister, beautiful queen, to say, hey, bitch and hoe.
Right.
What's the difference? We went from wearing afros to wearing blonde weeds. Now, look at it. Now, we're talking, we're speaking 45, 50 years.
Right.
So you see, there's a system in place. There's a system in place. And the system is, and how do they control the system? How are we being controlled? They're using their monopoly over the information that's been fed into our minds to program us to think and behave in ways that serve their interests. They're using the music industry, the hip hop industry, to negatively manipulate us. We're mm-hmm. being socially engineered, and we don't recognize it.
And even some of our artists.
Yeah,
I will never forget. I will never forget hearing Sister Soulja on NPR, on National Public Radio, talking yeah. about her situation and why she can't get the exposure and the record deals and so forth. This is at the
yes.
at the ending of conscious, so-called conscious rap and into gangster and thug rap, you know, which glorified gangsterism and drugs and guns and,
yes.
you know. And so she said, you know, myself, Karis, one of many of us of who are putting that positive information out there, they don't want to sell that. They want to push
yes.
and promote the debasement, the ignorance, and so forth. And that's what happened. And she said that. Go ahead.
And they're funded. I'm going to show you something. The government funds these programs. Let me tell you something. Within every government, there's two faces. There's the public government that professes equality for all the citizens. Then there's the other side known as the shadow government. The shadow government is unrelentingly committed to the preservation of its white dominance, okay? And a part of their programming is they say it is their responsibility to monitor black dissent and suppress black dissent. So what they say is they say that the positive black ideology music and rhetoric promotes black dissent against the white establishment. So they are programmed to diffuse black dissent, which includes going after positive black music, positive black rap. That's all by design. And they try this dumbed down, stupid, silly music that diffuse our mental state because they say that it's their responsibility as a part of keeping down black dissent. We have to understand the system we're in. And the only way to understand it is to be educated about the system. Because the education expands our mind, and once the mind is expanded to a greater level, it never returns to the smaller size. We must stop looking at our situation through fairy tales and myths. We must open our eyes to the reality of our condition. Because as long as we don't recognize it, we will stay their slaves.
Right on, Brother Frank. That's why in the middle of the week, we need this.
Yeah, you know, walk up next to the black guy, and you see him with his pants sagging off his butt. And he said, man, sir, you don't understand. This is how we dress. This is our style. You don't understand as young people. But they don't realize that they're actually being socially engineered. They don't understand that a group's identity is gained by how they feel so repeatedly in the media. And the media image of the black man is controlled by whites. When you watch a movie, you see the black person saying "nigga this, nigga that." You're seeing a black actor saying words from with my wife. Only 4.5% of TV writers
right.
are black.
Exactly.
Only 4.5%.
Exactly.
And number two, the movies to the left. So we're seeing caricatures of us as described by, as created by whites.
That's why.
That are used to become those images that they accept as being their truths.
That's why.
It's amazing. And our people just don't get it.
No. That's why in the movie Hollywood Shuffle, Roger Townsend.
Robert Townsend.
Yeah, Robert Townsend. In his movie,
I love that brother.
I do too. I do too, because he was on point. That was on point.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we do stuff and there's some comedy in it and so forth, but there's some very profound messages in it. And for some of us, because we look at movies from an entertainment aspect as opposed to something that we can get out of and look at it analytically, look at it from the aspect of what is it really saying to me? What are these images? What are these messages? What is being stated and what is not being stated?
Yes, the greatest social message is a dialogue into our minds when watching movies. Because when you're watching a movie, your mind is not into it like in a conference where you're debating. You're in an alpha state. It's called also the most suggestible state. You just relax and you're being downloaded with information. Your mind's not saying, I agree with this or I agree with, or I disagree with that. You're just being downloaded. And the white elite, they've studied it forever, and they use it to program messages into your mind. And that's why you and I had to go back and watch the Black Panther several times to review it.
Right.
There are programming in there. There are programming in there where you see the programming, the other programming, the Black Panther serves the interest of white supremacy. It sustains white society. You know, even at the end where the Black Panther goes and he shares his technology with a room full of white people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we have to understand the war in our mind. We have to understand, and we must stop agreeing with things that insult our intelligence. Yeah. I believe that all applies directly to a biblical prophecy written by our enslaved. That is so asinine. You know, we believe that the Bible is the word of God. When you study the Romans, were people who engaged in swingers, mass orgy, bestiality, incest, murder for amusement. These were the most violent people on the earth, and they wrote the Bible 225 AD. You know, and we believe that, it's the word of God, because the average people are not critical thinkers. And then we function based upon lies. Our refusal to critically think is why they eventually enslaved the masses.
Man, we've had a good conversation. We only have five minutes left, brother. Less time than that.
I'm going to take it down.
Both of us, you know, we can get riled up. But once again, Brother Frank, I appreciate you taking the time to come on every Wednesday and co-host this program with me, because we're on the same damn page. We're speaking.
Your show is therapy for me. It allows me to come out and speak with like-minded people. It allows me to connect with those across the globe, because that's what we need. We need to talk with like-minded people. And other people who are listening or not calling in, they need to hear people like themselves. These people who continue to listen to your show every Wednesday, they do so because they're awakened. They do so because they connect. So they need to hear affirming information. Because when they walk out in the world around there, those who are zombies and dumbed down and confused and calling themselves niggers and wearing a pentagon, they need to come to a place where they can hear in Black intelligence. You know? Black ideology, Afrocentric perspective. They need to hear that.
That's right.
That's why I love being on your show, and I love what you're about.
Well, I appreciate it. I really do, and I look forward to many weeks and months to come, man, over how long it's going to take, because I'm in this for the long haul, you know, even though my plans are to, you know, just like in the movie, get out.
Yeah.
That's what I ultimately plan. I'm going to do that, you know. But while I'm here, while I have the opportunity to have this forum, I'm going to speak our own special truths. Because once again, Brother Frank, I don't give you my opinion. I don't give my opinion because my opinion is profane. Yes. I wouldn't stop cussing if I gave you my opinion of how I detest these son of a bitches that and what they've done to us. So what I give you, what I give you is based on scholarly research by our scholars, our historians, our elders, our ancestors, men and women who made tremendous sacrifice to reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of our people to give us that knowledge so we know who we are. We know from whence we came. We know what we can do based upon what we've done. But yet the majority of our people don't understand this.
They don't.
They have no clue. They don't have any idea. And I'm talking about globally, not just here in America, where we're here in America. This ignorance doesn't have to be. You have at your disposal all kinds of literature, all kinds of videos, all kinds of everything to help get your mind right. But yet you persist in the ignorance. You know, go ahead and give me some closing words, brother, so I can get up out of here.
I just want to say I thank you very much for being on your show. Your show is powerful, profound, and I hope to do it for years to come.
Right on, brother.
And you are a blessing to our people.
And so are you, my brother. I appreciate you, man. Talk with you soon. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, and all those other adjectives that you can use to describe a people that have done to us what they have done to us. But the most potent weapon, not the whip, not the gun, but the most potent weapon in their hands is the minds, our minds. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And I'm just not talking about the M-I-N-D. I'm also talking about the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and don't want to pay for. And they're ours. We just need to reclaim and recapture them as Africans. Africans on the continent and throughout the diaspora. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Do something positive. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope you can be with us on Friday, where we can give your African perspective. Peace, family.